Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weekday Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your host, Belle Starr.
And the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona,
and the world at large. We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call live at 646-915-8421. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on all social media, or email thctucson@gmail.com.
We would like to thank Tumbleweeds Health Center and Studio C, along with our many sponsors, for hosting our show every week. With the lowest price certifications in town, you'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things related to medical cannabis education.
Visit Tumbleweeds Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. And remember,
be smart,
be safe,
and educate.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Weekday Wednesday. Belle Starr here. Good morning, Belle Starr. Good morning, Belle Starr. Where is the Cannabis Kid? He is on the road. He's cruising. He's out having a good time. Happy anniversary, guys. Hope you're having a great, great weekend. So today, it's just me, and it's just you, whoever's out there. Good morning, Grand Island. Friends all over the world today. That's across the country, folks. So how y'all doing? June 20th, 2016. Oh, lots going on. So I thought maybe with all that's going on, we just get into some really fun magazines that we have down at Tumbleweeds Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We are in the back. Come down and get certified. This is a great place. Friendly atmosphere, very professional staff, just a great group of folks. And come down, get certified, show support for your local cannabis center. Very, very, very important. Yeah, super important. Anyway, lots going on. What can we talk about? We've got in the news, we've got a little bit of news going on. Now, there is an initiative out there that's trying to get on the bill in Arizona here this year. But we've got some folks out there that are trying to block it. Let's see what's going on here. In Phoenix, it says there's a judge to hear a challenge to Arizona legalization initiative. So let's check this out. So there are a couple, well, MPPs supposedly supposed to be on the bill. We never know. We never know what happens, but apparently they're supposed to be on the bill. What we always like to say is get educated. We were hoping that AZFMR, the Mindful Regulation Initiative, would have been on the bill, maybe next time. And there's yet another one. So here in Phoenix, an attorney defending from a court challenge an Arizona Citizens Initiative that would legalize recreational marijuana is calling the attempt to keep the proposal off the ballot a Hail Mary effort by opponents of legal pot weed. Attorney Corey Langhofer said Tuesday that the lawsuit filed by 13 individuals and groups, including Maricopa County Attorney Bill Montgomery and Yavapai County Attorney Sheila Polk, is likely to fail because opponents are on thin legal ground. I'm very bullish on this lawsuit, Langhofer said. The bottom line here is the opponents of this initiative have to make a Hail Mary pass to keep it off the ballot because voters are pretty likely to support this initiative if they ever get a chance to express that. Langhofer's comments came from a Maricopa County Superior Court judge, set a schedule for the filing of legal briefs and set an August 12th date to hear oral arguments. Opponents of the initiative filed by a group called the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol argue in their lawsuit that the 100-word explanation on petition sheets doesn't fully explain the effects of the proposed legalization and that doesn't contain a legal funding mechanism. This is about the integrity of the initiative process, Polk said, and there are certain constitutional provisions and certain statutes that provide the framework that are focused on making sure voters understand what they are signing and understand what they are ultimately voting on. And if you don't abide by those rules, then you harm the integrity of the process. Under the measure, adults age 21 and older could carry up to 1 ounce of marijuana and consume it privately. Adults could also cultivate up to 6 marijuana plants in an enclosed space and possess the marijuana produced by the plant. No more than a dozen plants total would be allowed in a single residence. The system would regulate pot like alcohol with a 15% tax imposed on all retail marijuana sales. Most of the revenue from the tax would go to Arizona schools and education programs. Polk and other opponents argue that the summary doesn't adequately explain all the effects of the measure, including its effect on laws regulating driving while impaired. That means that approximately 250,000 people who signed petitions seeking to put the measure on the November ballot weren't given enough information to understand all the consequences. Election officials still are verifying whether the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol submitted the 150,000 ballot signatures needed to qualify for the ballot. Langhofer calls the argument legally deficient. Sheila Polk and company say that the 100-word summary was misleading because it didn't describe everything in a 30-page initiative. Of course it doesn't describe everything. It's a 100-word summarizing 30 pages. And there's plenty of case law in Arizona that says it doesn't have to describe everything. It just has to give them a rough idea of what the 30 pages do. Polk said she's worried about the effects of legalizing marijuana. I would point you to Colorado that passed the recreation initiative in 2012, and that has just a whole cascade of negative consequences coming from it, including a youth use rate that is now the highest in the nation, Polk said. Kids ages 12 to 17 in Colorado now use marijuana on a regular basis that is 74% higher than the national average. In the cities and towns that allow retail pot shops, they are experiencing increased homelessness that is very significant in terms of tourists. Homeless shelters in Denver have reported an increase in people needing service because they moved to Colorado because of legal marijuana. But teen marijuana use rates are actually below the national average, according to a 2015 survey by the state health department. They have remained relatively unchanged since legalization. Well, and there you have it. This is what we always talk about. I'm sure legally they can just give you a 100-word summary of what this is about. But it's up to you to go get the whole thing and read it, because you would probably not, as patients or just citizens, be very happy to find out the consequences of having over your ounce or getting in any trouble with it. Like with anything, you have to be careful and you have to follow the rules. So, you know, whatever gets set up, it's who knows? We're really intrigued by this whole process. The state of Arizona is now accepting applications for dispensaries as well. So we're going to see what's going on in that avenue too. But that's interesting. It's, you know, we had both the MPP and the AZFMR initiatives that you could read for yourself down at Tumbleweeds Health Center, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. Come on down. We're in the back. Don't be scared. But we had both those initiatives and you could read for yourself. We had, I don't know, a 10, 15 page little. It wasn't the whole thing, but we had, you know, a good chunk of everything at a side-by-side as to what MPP was doing versus AZFMR. And there's some really major differences in there that I think people really need to take a look at. It's hard to just say, yeah, let's do this without reading the bottom line. And that's what these folks are saying. On the other hand, Arizona and lots of states pass laws that we don't even know about in our sleep at night. So we got to be careful. Get out there, read your initiatives, please. Please, please, please educate yourself and read your initiatives. Also,
if you suffer from one of these medical conditions and have been diagnosed by an Arizona licensed physician, medical cannabis may help relieve your symptoms. Tumbleweeds Health Center is Arizona's premier cannabis certification, health, and education center. Our primary focus is to help the patients of Arizona obtain their medical marijuana card and educate everyone about medical cannabis. With current medical records, approval is a simple process. Contact Tumbleweeds Health Center to see if you qualify for your Arizona medical marijuana card.
Yes. www.tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. I know that's a mouthful. 520-838-4430. If you want to chime in right now with me, we are at 646-915-8421. Weed Day Wednesday Live. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. What's the weather like back east, folks? What's going on, Netherlands? How's it going out there, world? Let's see what we got. So if you come down to Tumbleweeds Health Center, we've got some really fun new magazines. Thank you, MG Magazine and Dope Magazine, for sending your free magazines. That's right, absolutely free. Come on down. You can pick them up. They're back. They're beautiful. This MG for the cannabis professional. It says, and here they're talking about a purified cannabis oil. That's interesting, the benefits of purified cannabis oil. But what we're going to talk about, there's a little section in here I really like. It's called Numbers. And this is actually, oh, look, what do you know? We're in July. So we're reading July's month. That's amazing. Usually when we read out of High Times, we're like a couple months ahead. So today we're going to read a little bit out of MG Magazine for the cannabis professional. And this is Oregon's marijuana market. We're just checking out what's going on in the rest of the world here. So there are 418 registered medical marijuana dispensaries statewide. That's a lot. 418. That's okay. Three dispensaries are facing state enforcement action for rule violations since recreational marijuana sales began in October. There are 167 dispensaries in Portland alone. 850 recreational marijuana licenses that the state expects to issue this year across Oregon. Wow. There are 1,200 to 2,000 recreational marijuana license applications that the state expects to receive this year. The agency will issue six types of licenses: producer, wholesaler, processor, retailer, lab, and researcher. Well, that's interesting. That's a good way of doing things. Legal governments opting out of recreational marijuana sales. 19 counties and 81 cities are opting out of recreational marijuana sales. Interesting. That's really interesting. That doesn't make it easy, folks, for people with challenges getting around town, wheelchair-bound, homebound, to get to places unless other dispensaries are delivering, actually. But that's not really a nice thing to do to people that want this choice, and it's not an alternative, people. It's just a choice like anything else. 12 Oregon Liquor Control Commission employees working on processing and investigating recreational marijuana applications. 12. There are 12 employees working on all those 2,000 applications coming in. The top-selling strain in Oregon, where is it? Where is it? It is Girl Scout Cookies. That's interesting. All righty. Medical marijuana patients in Oregon, 72,937 medical marijuana patients in Oregon. $13.67 is the average price per gram on the recreational market, which is taxed. Average per gram on the medical market, which is untaxed, is $10.96. 3.48 million is the taxes collected from January sales of recreational marijuana. Let's say that again. $3.48 million was collected in taxes from January sales of recreational marijuana. That's awesome. That's helping out a lot. Unlimited. The amount of dried marijuana flowers you can possess without facing a felony. The Oregon legislature has made it a misdemeanor to possess more than 2 pounds. Criminal defense lawyers note, however, that possession of a large amount of marijuana may prompt a drug distribution accusation. But you can have an unlimited amount. That's awesome. Because a lot of people like to cook, and it can take quite a bit to cook up a good batch, and even more so if you're juicing, which is a wonderful way to use this plant. Everybody should try juicing sometime. You don't need that much, but you know, you want to have enough on hand so that you're not panicking, so that you don't have to worry about, you know, if you're going to have enough medicine for tomorrow, because that's always a scary thing. So, yeah, where was this? There was another article here about, we'll go to this one, sorry. There is an article that we're going to go to, and we're now in Dope Magazine. And thank you, Dope and MG, for sending these in. This is awesome. Whoopi's on the cover of this one. It is actually July 2016. So check it out, Whoopi Goldberg, my and Mary Jane's sister pack. But we are going to read a brief history of plant-based fuels and materials in the automotive industry. This is interesting. Henry Ford and Thomas Edison's were close friends. The two owned winter homes next door to each other in Florida, where Edison had a botanical library researching industrial uses of plants. Both were friends of farmers and convinced that the energy from plants and the industrial materials they produced could be used for the greater good. By 1941, Ford had created a car made of plastic manufactured and fueled mostly from plants. It will be a car of darn sight better design in every form, he announces via the New York Times in February 1941. And don't forget, the motor car business is just one of the industries that can find new uses for plastic made from what's grown in the land. 300 pounds lighter than Ford's steel frame model and said to be more durable than metal, his plastic car from the garden was made from a combination of strong fibers that included corn, ramie, hemp, straw, soy, and slash pine fibers, fueled in part by a combination of ethanol made from corn. Ironically, DuPont had already created the first synthetic material from petroleum in 1935, with its own patent for nylon registered in 1937. Nylon initially replaced silk for women's hosiery, but the petroleum-based material was just the start of a plastic industrial revolution that spawned the pharmaceutical industry, successfully replacing plant-based medicine. Though electric cars had been produced around the world since the late 1800s, saving energy via batteries combined with a lack of speed did not make them attractive to the consumer. Ford himself built one as an experiment in 1895 and was said to have a personal collection of electric cars made at that time. It wasn't until 1913 that Ford announced via the New York Times, "Within a year, I hope we shall begin the manufacture of an electric automobile. The fact is that Mr. Edison and I have been working for some years on an electric automobile, which would be cheap and practicable. The problem so far has been to build a storage battery of lightweight, which would operate for a long distance without recharging. Mr. Edison has been experimenting with such a battery for some time." An energy plant was purchased in Niagara Falls, and a manufacturing plant was set up in Dearborn, but all was lost by the fire in December of 1914. Instead, Ford went on into production with his combustion engine that was said to be less costly to the consumer. Some speculate the drug war was created out of sheer prejudice to minorities, specifically blacks and Hispanics, where cannabis and hemp were concerned. Did the powers that be use prejudice as smoke and mirrors to demonize hemp and the use of plant-based fuels and industrial materials? We can't change the past, but we can move forward with the newfound knowledge of the power of plants, specifically hemp, and its relationship to the sun and the energy found naturally on our planet. That's right. You go, boys. They were playing in 1913. He was going to get one out to us. That was awesome. And our buddy, Mr. Doug Fine, is out there doing wonderful things with hemp as well. You can check him out, DougFine.com. But yeah, what I was just thinking about this morning was reading about the different states and what's going on. We get a lot of people that come into Tumbleweeds Health Center, and they want to know from their state what they can do. Now, in Arizona is a reciprocal state. So let's see, what do we have here? Is that on our list here? Well, let's just start with Alaska. But if you're just listening quickly, Arizona is reciprocal. The only thing you can't do here is go to a dispensary if you have your card, but you can use it and you can carry it and you can possess it. And that's a really good thing. So let's see. This is actually from Dope Magazine. Will be on the cover of the July issue. And this is Legal Weed Part 1. So are we good to grow yet, they ask? This is Part 1, so we'll see. Hopefully next month will be another part for us, and I'll make the kid read that one. Together we have fought for legalization in states with recreational and medical cannabis, and the results have been mixed. There are 40 states with medical marijuana laws enacted, and among these are 16 states with laws that pertain to legal non-psychoactive CBD. Several states have passed laws permitting the use of CBD extract containing insignificant amounts of THC. Often utilized for treatment of epilepsy or seizures in critically ill children, it typically comes in oil form. For the purposes of this article, we will set aside CBD-specific laws, the reason being that CBD-specific laws do not allow for the use of the cannabis plant itself for medical purposes, and these states do not allow home cultivation. 22 states and Washington, D.C. have medical legalization that permit patients to possess cannabis. Out of these medical cannabis, 8 do not authorize home growing for patients. To break that down, 41 states and Washington, D.C. have some sort of medical legislation. 23 states that grant patients access to the cannabis plant, but only 14 states and Washington, D.C. allow patients to grow their own medicine. The question is then raised, why is there such a dramatic difference in state-to-state medical cannabis laws? Good question. Possession limits for patients vary greatly from state to state with no apparent rhyme or reason. Alaska has a patient possession limit for 1 ounce, while Oregon has a 24-ounce limit. State plant count differs just as considerably between states with no seemingly rational influence on possession limits. Currently, California does not have concrete possession or cultivation limits. To further illustrate how irrational the plant possession counts are, Rhode Island patients can have 12 mature plants and 12 seedlings, but may only possess 2.5 ounces of usable harvest. It seems either lawmakers do not comprehend basic cannabis cultivation, or they made a system designed for patients to fail, thus forcing cultivation to become an exclusively commercial institution. I think it's the first one. I think they have no idea. Because you can't, even with one plant, you can get 2.5 ounces. But that's just really insane. In many states that authorize patients to grow, state laws do not allow cultivation in a home that is within a certain proximity to a dispensary. In Arizona, home grows cannot be within a 25-mile radius of a dispensary. Rhode Island lawmakers have proposed a tax on every plant a patient grows. The $350 per plant fee that Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo wants to impose on growers is an extreme regressive taxation on this life-saving drug, said Tony Jones, who ran for Lieutenant Governor of Rhode Island in 2014. Moreover, this tax will be exclusively levied on the most vulnerable Rhode Islanders amongst us, cancer patients, sufferers of multiple sclerosis, paralysis, etc. This is perhaps the most disgusting exercise of raw governmental power that I've seen in my time as a political activist. It's clear that until the federal government reschedules cannabis, we'll continue to see a patchwork of state-led legislative initiatives that are more informed by politics than by public health. It's true. Read the initiatives that are out there now and see what you think of them, because when it comes time to vote for us, Arizona, you guys really need to know what you're reading. It's really not okay not to, or what you're voting for. Know what you're reading. More importantly, know what you're voting for. So read and then know. Okay, so we are in Dope Magazine. The travel issue says, oh, that's great, because it is still summertime and it's stupid hot still here. Sorry, folks. Alaska. Okay, year past was 1998. See, and this is something that most people don't know either. I love the little history facts here, because people just think this stuff is just going on now, and it's been going on for a long time. People have been fighting for this plant for a very long time. Ever since they took it away and started to take it away, people have been fighting for it, and that's pretty awesome. Ballot measure. Ballot measure 8, 58%. Passed by 58%. Possession limit, 1 ounce, usable, 6 plants, 3 mature, 3 immature. One possession limit, 1 ounce, usable. Okay. Well, see, that's where they got, if they're allowing you plants are usable, but they don't consider it that way. They just think smoke. They're still stuck back in the smoke days. All right, Arizona passed in 2010. Measure and percent in favor was, Prop 203, 50.13% in favor. Possession limit, 2.5 ounces, and usable 12 plants in closed locked facility. Residents must be further than 25 miles from a state licensed dispensary. Unless you have a patient that lives way out in the middle of nowhere and you're close to a dispensary, you can go for them. But you have to have your license. It must say authorized to cultivate, folks. That's the other most important part here. Play by the rules. Don't be dumb and don't be greedy, because it greed's out there. You don't need it. because when you do it right, health and happiness and financial stability can come if that's what you're looking for. So just do it right. California, year passed in 1996, and it was Prop 215, and it passed by 55.6%. So these aren't like high margins we're talking about, folks, here. You can have a possession limit up to 100 square feet for personal use. Okay. Colorado, year past 2000. And the measure and percent in favor ballot amendment, 20. Ballot amendment 20, 53.5%. You can have 2 ounces, 6 plants, 3 mature, and 3 immature. And that is Colorado. Connecticut, that passed in 2012. Measure and percent in favor. It was House Bill 5389, 96 to 51, H 21 to 13 S. Possession limit, 1 month supply, maximum 2.5 ounces, no home grow. So you get 2.5 ounces in a month, basically, and no home growing in Connecticut. Okay. D.C., year passed was 2010. Measure and percent in favor. It was Amendment Act B18-622, and it was a 13-0 vote. Go figure. You can have 2 ounces. You can have dried limits on other forms to be determined. 2 ounces dry. That's it. No home grow. Wow, no home grow in D.C. Interesting. Delaware. That passed in 2011. Senate Bill 17, and it was 27 to 14H, 17 to 4S. Possession limit, 6 ounces, usable, no home grow in Delaware. Come on, guys. Hawaii passed in 2000, and that was Senate Bill 862, and that passed 32 to 18, House 13 to 12, Senate. Illinois, year past 2013. If you're tuning in right now, folks, this is Weed Say Wednesday. We are listening to a state-by-state play. Well, this is actually just a few states from the Dope Magazine. We can go through all of them in the normal thing when we come back after the break here. But we're going state-by-state and let you know what's happening in your state, in our state, if it happens to be that. And Arizona, they didn't say it. Arizona is a reciprocal state. I wish that they had said that in there, and which states are and are not. California, I know you have to get a card there. You have to have an address and such. Arizona, you if you want a card here, you have to have an address and some ID and such, and some doctor's notes and things. But Arizona allows you to use it here. So if you come, you know, there's a lot of snowbirds coming. Half the year we get snowbirds, and they have medical cannabis needs as well, and they're able to use it. A lot of them just go ahead and get certified. In fact, they come down to Tumbleweeds Health Center, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We are in the back. Coming down, get certified. It's only $270. That includes everything, state fee, all the processing, taking your pretty picture, sending all the forms in, waiting, checking the mailbox. Yeah. $250 if it's a renewal, and if you're computer savvy, you can save another $35, take it home, do it yourself, and you want to save even more money if you are on food stamps. Our government will give you half off their fee, the state fee, so it just becomes $75 for the state fee instead of $150. So come on down and get certified. It's not so scary. So if you are in Maine, beautiful, beautiful postcard of a state. It passed in 1999. It was ballot question number 2. There you go. That's all it was, ballot question number 2. Passed by 61%. You can have 2.5 ounces and 6 plants. I like the way Maine did it. It was a question on the ballot. Yes or no? 61% said yes, and now they can grow. I love it. All right. We'll do one more before a break. We're going to go to Maryland. That passed in 2014, and the measure was House Bill 881, and it passed 125-11 in the House, 44-2 in the Senate. Not yet operational, though. You may have, you're allowed a 30-day supply, and amount and that amount is to be determined, actually. They haven't figured it out. But you don't get a home grow in that. That's a bummer. You know what you get here, though?
Puff, 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 puff,
into my house, like, what up? I got some good pot. I'm just pumped up, got some herb from the pot shop. Ice in my fridge, it used to be frosty. My friend's like, damn, that's a stoned ass donkey. Rolling in hella high, looking like it's FIFA time. Dominating all my friends as I eat some chili fries. Draped in a Snuggie with my girl sitting next to me. Probably shouldn't have had a big gulp full of iced tea. But shit, it was 99 cents. I'll be blazing and smoking it. About to go and get some munchies next. Passing up on those Cracker Jacks. Reese's Pieces are where it's at. Gotta get me some soda pop. Cottonmouth has been creeping up. But can't remember where I put my keys. Yeah, that's what's up. I'ma take your grandpa's ride. I'ma take your grandpa's ride. No, for real. Ask your grandpa. Can I take a 65? Deville cruising to my local Publix. Nothing better than rolling with two super fly chicks. They have frozen burritos. I bought frozen burritos. I bought some Ben and Jerry's. And then I bought some Cheetos. Hello, hello, my main man Obama. A couple states have just reformed their laws on marijuana. What you gonna do, send the feds there? Hell no, the DEAs would be like, aw, they got volcanoes.
I'm gonna smoke some weed, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunting, looking for a pot shop, this is fucking awesome.
Know about the science of marijuana? What you know about people suffering from glaucoma? They need it, it helps them with their condition. If you don't believe me, then just ask some eye physicians. Thank your granddad for voting for that guy Richard Nixon is the president who made the plant illegal, but science is now showing that it's medicine for people, and the private sector's fighting to keep all of that illegal. Alcohol and tobacco, pharmaceutical prisons. I'll take those four major lobby groups and fight those motherfuckers. They're making money day and night, all those motherfuckers, and bribing Congress out of sight, all those motherfuckers. They'd be like, oh, it's immoral and unhealthy. I'm like, how many people are you making wealth? Anti-marijuana lobbies are making all kinds of profits, and they don't want you to stop it because of all the special interest. I call that getting swindled and pimped shit. I call that getting tricked by the government. That law's hella old, so it's time to update it, regulate it, and then get it under state control. Peak game, look into my political telescope. Think it's gonna stay like this forever? Not hella won't. Not hella won't.
Hey Obama, stop being a hypocrite. You used to smoke weed, fool.
I'm gonna smoke some weed, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunt, looking for a pot shop, this is fucking awesome. Let's end the war on drugs, it's time to pull the plug. These special interest groups are nothing more than corporate thugs. Let's end the war on weed. The people have agreed. These special interest groups have kept these laws with bribery. I'm gonna smoke some weed.
Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunt, looking for a pot shop. This is fucking awesome.
All right, welcome back to Weed Day Wednesday. Woo-hoo! How's it going out there, everybody? Anybody have any information they want to share? Anybody partaking in anything this morning they want to talk about? Cheese and kush for me. Cheese. Every time someone says cheese on Rachel Ray, they clap. I think we should have a clap for cheese. For the cheese thing. Woo-hoo! All right, so we're getting back into reading about the different states and what each state is. Well, we're just going through the few that actually have use for patients that need cannabis. So we did Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts. Let's see here. It was passed in 2013. It was ballot question number 3. I love these states. It's just, here's the question, yes or no. 63.3% said yes. And that's That's a pass, folks. You can have less than or equal to 10 ounces every 2 months. That's not so bad. It's kind of almost equal to what we get. If I did my math quickly, correctly, accurately, probably not. Let's see. Michigan. What do we got for Michigan? Passed in 2008, folks. You guys know all this? These states have been doing this stuff for a long, long time. California since 1996. Michigan since 2008. It was proposal number one, passed by 63%. You can have 2.5 ounces and 12 plants. I love it. I hate this, like, you can have, you know, three immature. I just want them to have their plants, peeps. All right. Minnesota, 2014, and that was Senate Bill 2470. It passed 46-16 S, 89-40 H. You can have 30-day supply of non-smokable marijuana, no home grow. That's pretty sad. I mean, that's great that you can have a 30-day supply, but if people want to smoke it, they should be able to, because it's one of the fastest ways to feel the effects of cannabis. But maybe they've got some great vaporizations going on, because you can vaporize. There's some really nice vaporizers. In fact, down at Tumbleweed Health Center, 5350 Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We're in the back. Come on down. Come get some vaporizers. There's some wicked sales going on. We've got some that are 30% off right now. Yep, you heard that right. Come and get them. Can get them while they last. In fact, I'm not so sure we have too very many left. All right, let's see. Montana, 2004, Big Sky. Initiative 148, passed by 62%. You can have an ounce. And 4 mature plants and 12 seedlings. Okay. All right. Sorry to the 8 seedlings that don't get to mature ever. All right, Nevada, 2001. That was ballot question number 9, passed by 65%. I love it. Number 9, they get 2.5 ounces of usable. 12 plants must be 25 miles from a dispensary unless specific strain isn't available. Oh, no. That's awesome. Wow, that's great. Well, we all know a way around that one right now. New Hampshire, 2013. That was House Bill 573, passed. 284-66 in the House and 18-6 in the Senate. Possession limit was 2 ounces of usable cannabis and no home grow. Boo. New Hampshire passed in 2010. It was Senate Bill 119 and 48-14 in the House, 25-13 in the Senate. 2 ounces of usable per month, no home grow. New Mexico passed in 2007, Senate Bill 523. You got 6 ounces, and you get 16 plants. Woo! 4 mature, 12 immature. Okay, again, I'm not sure about the math on this mix here. Way plants grow. In New York, 2014, woo-hoo! Assembly Bill 6357, you get, here's your possession limit, a 30-day supply of non-smokable preparations. Smokable preparations. Does someone out there want to blog me what a non-smokable preparation is? That's very interesting. Somebody should look that up in the New York law out there if you happen to be in New York. In Oregon, that passed in 1998, folks. This was ballot measure 67, passed by 55%. You get 24 ounces of usable, 24 plants, 6 mature, 18 seedlings. Okay. So we move on to Rhode Island. We've got it passed year 2006, and the Senate bill was 0710. You can have, I thought that said 25 ounces. I was like really excited. I'm like, woo, we're going to Rhode Island. 2.5 ounces, tiny, tiny print here. 2.5 ounces of usable. You get 12 plants, 12 seedlings indoor. Oh, they specify indoor. Okay. All right, right. And Vermont passed in 2004. This was Senate Bill 76. Oh, and HB 645, there were two. Senate bill passed 22-7. HB 645 passed 82-59. In Vermont, you can have 2 ounces of usable. You get 9 plants, 2 mature, 7 immature. And in Washington, it passed in 1998. Initiative 692 passed by 59%. And here's the possession limit. 16 ounces usable, 15 plants. As of July 1st, 2016, Washington state law allows patients to enter a voluntary database which will permit them to possess up to 6 plants and 8 ounces of usable marijuana, with an allowance of up to 15 plants and 16 ounces with a doctor's authorization. All patients not entered into the database will only be allowed to possess 4 plants and 6 ounces. Okay, so what, you know, and there you have it. That's actually pretty cool. There you go. There are states that, the 28 that allow us some sort of possession, and some allow to grow and some don't. But I don't understand, if you're allowing the growth of all those plants, how in the world can you limit the amount of ounces they have if you're going to most likely limit the fact that you're not going to allow them to just go out on the road and sell it door to door? I would imagine that would be the case. So check with your local dispensaries and your local state programs to find out what to do with your excess. I believe in the state of Arizona, you can work with dispensaries to get rid of that excess. I'm not sure exactly. You might want to check that out. But that's the most important thing, is to know your rules, to know your state laws. We know federally all about it. But know what's going on, and please abide by those rules. Make sure you carry your card with you. What we always tell people after they get certified, Tumbleweed Cell Center, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We're in the back. Come on down. We tell you, as soon as you get that card in the mail, take a picture. Take a picture of it, because if you ever lose it, there's a magic ID number on there that you're going to need. And so you should have it at all times. You should know that number. And if you happen to lose it or drop it or whatever, happens to get stolen, you have a copy there in case you get pulled over and the officer is requesting your information. So here's another little article I wanted to read, if we have a little moment here. This is called Straining to See the Difference. This is the origins of sativa and indica strains. So check it out. We're in Dope Magazine right now, reading with Whoopi. Reading with Whoopi, I love it. I think she'd like it. Boy, that's a tremendous laugh track. That was a pretty good joke. We're on page 42, and then it just dies. Dead. All right, cut. They got the director's cut. All right, with all the crazy and even beautiful cannabis names and strains out there, it makes you wonder, where did all these strains come from? I mean, if cannabis has been seen in human history for thousands of years, why do we just now have Maui Wowie, or more importantly, AC/DC? Before we can jump into the complexities of breeding, it would be nice to have a little clarity on the differences between sativa and indica, and even where all of these strains come from. And that's a nice distinction, and that's something you should be aware of, because especially first-time users, if you have anxiety or are prone to it, people with mental conditions, and such, be careful with your sativas. They can be very, very, very energetic and creative, and can cause your anxiety to be exacerbated, or any other condition you have that you may not want to have. So just be careful with any medication, with any substance you use. Just know what you're putting in your body. Know your body. The unique thing about cannabis is we don't know exactly where the plant first grew in one place, or if it developed simultaneously across multiple continents. What we do know is that it's all one species, and it's been bred and used for different purposes across the globe. Just as the trees change from state to state and certain varieties of tomatoes thrive in a pot and lie flat in your garden bed, most plants have developed specific characteristics to help them survive their environment. The same is true of cannabis. The long, stretchy plants we've come to know as sativas and the short, stubby plants known as indicas develop these differences to adapt to their environment. Within each subspecies, several distinctions exist as well. Imagine growing in a room that never has less than 60% humidity or less than 14 hours of sunlight. Cannabis sativa is what came out of this aggressive climate, and you can clearly see it in the growth. The long internodal spacing, the tall, lean structure, and airy buds are a direct result of long, cool days and especially the prevalence of humidity. This type of cannabis has thrived in such conditions and spread its families to maximize solar absorption while minimizing the potential for mold, something quite important when it rains and shines every day and is over 90 degrees. On the flip side, we have our Middle Eastern desert cannabis. Intense sun, high winds, and drastic variable temperatures force this plant to stay compact and flower fast. The amazing density we've come to expect stems from the bushy ancestors that we've been breeding for decades. The low humidity, high volume of air exchange, and near non-existence of molds and mildews are what this growth profile to persevere. Where we have both sides of the fence, there's always an in-between, which humans came across these different phenotypes or strains of cannabis. There weren't only two types of the plant. Sativa and indica represent two of the main growth types we see from across the world. But in reality, there were thousands of naturally bred hybrids showing a cornucopia of different traits and blends of the two. Once humans got involved, various strains were bred for different needs. From hemp to high, we made it work for us through strategic breeding over centuries. Regardless of the phenotype, 27% THC wasn't likely to have been naturally found in any of the strains our ancestors would have come across. In fact, the anecdotal notion that cannabis has gotten stronger over the decades is indeed accurate. An increase in the desired chemical profiles of our favorite plants is exactly what breeders have been trying to do. By crossing plants with desirable traits and weeding out the others, breeders have learned how to target and stabilize the genetics toward a specific goal. Now that we can finally test and in some states research cannabis and its medical benefits, we're seeing the storm of CBD and the lives that can change. While it took over 30 years to breed from 15% to 25% THC, as a community, we've managed to breed several strains of high CBD plants in only a matter of years. Thanks to technology and the changing of tides of our legal system, cannabis breeding is finally reopening itself to the rest of the world. As we explore forgotten methods and discover new ones, we recognize that we are at the cusp of what cannabis can be. The plant was already shifted from its position at the forefront of the war on drugs to an accepted treatment for cancer. It begs the question, where will we bring cannabis next, and where will cannabis bring us? That's a very good question. I love it. Where will cannabis bring us? I think we're going to have a lot of financial freedom in the future. There was an article, maybe I can find it. One state is actually using, maybe it's San Francisco, is using cannabis to, they're donating their part to taxes to the homeless. So they're taking taxes from cannabis. I think it's the city. Maybe it's Los Angeles. It's one of those two great cities. And they're using taxes from cannabis, and they're donating it to homeless shelters. And that's awesome. But check this out. This is something that we always hear. And that's cannabis in the brain. You know, most people think that stoners are stupid. And I always say stoners are smart. Some of the most creative people I've ever met. And in over 4 years of interviews, they've outsmarted me most every single time. Cannabis in the brain. And this is, we get this from the Weed Blog. This is another great source of news. We just randomly go out there and find news in lots of places. We like to support different news organizations that go out and hunt for cannabis news so that we can share it with you live, so that while you're secretly listening at work and pretending to work there, we can share something with you. Cannabis in the brain. Controversy has surrounded this topic of cannabis in the brain for decades, but has been coming to the forefront of conversation as more states vote to legalize and regulate cannabis across America. Research on this subject dates all the way to the 1960s, when a physician by the name of Dr. Lester Grinspoon, who has been on the show, came to the conclusion that many of the so-called dangers of this plant were both hyped and unfounded. Through his work, he concluded that cannabis was, in fact, a remarkably safe substance, at least for adults. Current research on this topic that has developed even deeper has come to support what cannabis can do for the brain, particularly in the area of medicine. Recently, as a part of the Oregon Health and Science University, Brain Institute series of educational lectures about the brain, Dr. Nessie Stella, PhD, a professor in the departments of pharmacology and psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the University in Washington and founder of Stella Therapeutics, spoke about cannabis and the brain. Dr. Stella is researching how the bioactive components devoid of drug abuse properties produced by cannabis sativa can be used to treat neurodegenerative diseases. Dr. Stella's lecture largely focused on the methods for drug discovery and development regarding cannabis, particularly for treating epilepsy and seizures, as well as brain tumors. Explained everything from original evidence, current medical treatments available, preclinical models with CBD, cannabidiol, and what is happening now in terms of medical research. He also told the crowd that we are seeing efficacy with cannabis in treating other cancers, and that the preclinical models being done are showing evidence of cancer-killing activity by the plant. He explained that he wants to create a super cannabinoid to kill tumor cells. Dr. Stella also made it clear that the consumption of THC is damaging to young people and children, and that in terms of the states where cannabis has been legalized recreationally, we're living in a huge experiment, and stressed the importance of monitoring the substance. However, he also talked about how, after the age of 25, consuming THC is, quote, not so bad and can be even beneficial as you grow older, quote. Currently, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, NIDA, even states that CBD, quote, may be useful in reducing pain and inflammation, controlling epileptic seizures, and possibly even treating mental illness and addictions, quote. The NIDA site also explains that recent animal studies have shown that marijuana extracts may help kill certain cancer cells and reduce the size of others. Evidence from one cell culture study suggests that purified extracts from whole plant marijuana can slow the growth of cancer cells from one of the most serious types of brain tumors. We must be aware, however, that cannabis is still listed as Schedule 1 substance under the U.S. federal government's Controlled Substance Act. Until we are able to deschedule cannabis, we are unable to get FDA-approved research on the topic of cannabis in the brain or any topic where cannabis is involved, for that matter. There's a limited amount of research we can do right now, and only researchers like Dr. Nessie Stella, who have private funding are in legalized states, are able to do so. In the closing of his lecture, Dr. Stella said he would like to try and crack the code to find out how this plant can help so many people in so many ways, and we wholeheartedly support him in that. Absolutely. You have to, once again, I talked about cannabis not being good for kids. Do your research. There are a lot of children that are benefiting from the science and education and use of cannabis. Just do your research. We've had several articles. I'm not sure if I'm in right now, but on our website, you can go to tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. Check it out. We did just recently put an article up, which I'll read now. A study about cannabis and how it can eliminate toxin protein from Alzheimer's disease. I know I read this last week, but I think we should read it again because it's really important. And it's just one disease that cannabis is helping with. So scientists at the Salk Institute Labs in San Diego have come up with the preliminary evidence that THC and other compounds that cannabis part can eliminate amyloid beta, the toxic protein generally associated with Alzheimer's disease. The Institute officials have warned that the findings published in the journal Aging and Mechanisms of Disease June issue mustn't be taken as an indication that cannabis is a cure for Alzheimer's. They carried out studies in neurons grown in a lab, and the studies could ultimately offer insight in the part inflammation plays in the disease. The work of Salk Institute may offer indications regarding creating novel therapeutics for the disorder. The study's senior author, David Schubert, said, although other studies have offered evidence that cannabinoids might be neuroprotective against the symptoms of Alzheimer's, we believe our study is the first to demonstrate that cannabinoids affect both inflammation and amyloid beta accumulation in nerve cells. The progressive brain disorder, Alzheimer's disease, results into memory loss and can severely impair the ability of a person to conduct everyday tasks. The National Institutes of Health said that it affects over 5 million people in America and is the country's most common cause of dementia and main cause of death. In the coming half century, the incidence of Alzheimer's is likely to become three times. For long, it has been known that amyloid beta gets collected in the nerve cells of the aging brain quite prior to the appearance of the symptoms and plaques of Alzheimer's disease, as per the Salk Institute. Amyloid beta is the main part of the plaque deposits, a trait of Alzheimer's. But the exact roles played by amyloid beta and the plaques it makes aren't clear so far. Most images of marijuana in pop culture involve stoners getting high and forgetting what they were doing. But what if weed could actually prevent memory problems instead of causing them, according to a news report published by The Observer? The Salk team actually began their study by examining J147, another experimental Alzheimer's drug. As they put that drug through its paces, they discovered that it activated endocannabinoids, receptors that mediate the effects of marijuana on the brain but can also reduce brain inflammation. Given this result, researchers decided to find out if marijuana itself could help memory. They altered human nerve cells in the lab so they would produce high levels of amyloid, a protein produced in the brain that can build up and form plaque deposits. The accumulation of these deposits over time may hasten the development of Alzheimer's disease. The government doesn't want to fund clinical trials, and drug companies can't make a profit. Until the social structure changes and the laws change, it's going to be difficult to sort this out, said David Schubert. According to a story published on this topic by Weekly, scientists at the Salk Institute labs in San Diego have published preliminary evidence that THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, and other compounds found in cannabis can remove amyloid beta, the toxic protein most commonly associated with Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive brain disorder. It leads to memory loss and can seriously impair a person's ability to carry out daily tasks. So it's really important to do your research, folks, and don't dismiss it, because until we started hearing a lot about this and dementia and things like that, I didn't know the whys, but that's very interesting. So go to tumbleweedshealthcenter.com and check it out. You can also come down to Tumbleweeds Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We are in the back. Come get certified. It's really not that expensive. We call it your tiny little lawyer. It really makes a big difference. We see a lot of people come in after the fact, and they're in trouble with the law somehow, and they need their card. So don't get in trouble with the law, but come get your card before anything does happen. And if you have PTSD, cancer, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, ALS, Crohn's disease, agitation of Alzheimer's disease, a chronic or debilitating disease, or a medical condition, or the treatment for a chronic or debilitating disease or a medical condition that causes wasting syndrome, severe and chronic pain, severe nausea, seizures, including those characteristic of epilepsy, severe or persistent muscle spasms, including those characteristics of multiple sclerosis.
If you suffer from one of these medical conditions and have been diagnosed by an Arizona licensed physician, medical cannabis may help relieve your symptoms. Tumbleweeds Health Center is Arizona's premier cannabis certification, health, and education center. Our primary focus is to help the patients of Arizona obtain their medical marijuana card and educate everyone about medical cannabis. With current medical records, approval is a simple process. Contact Tumbleweeds Health Center to see if you qualify for your Arizona medical marijuana card.
There you have it, folks. You can contact us at tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. You can give a call to 520-838-4430. Come on down, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We are in the back. Cannabis Kid, we hope you are having a fabulous time on the road, and be safe always. And join us next week. We may have somebody from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We're hoping to have an interview next week. And we always want to thank Growers House. And I want to give a shout-out to Dope Again and MG Magazine for sending out your free magazines every month to us so patients can get informed and get involved and get some cool recipes, actually. But come on down. Tumbleweed Health Center, 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We're in the back. Remember, be smart, be safe, and educate. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Have a great day. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.